At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
Hi, it's Isabella Lundberg here at the World Messenger, and I'm super thrilled and excited to introduce you to today's guest. And that is going to shed some light what we can learn from professional coach and sports performance in our today life. What can we learn from someone, not only the coach Olympians, but also who is transcending between different sports, who established his legacy and reputation coaching women's tennis professional athletes, all the way to football players, boxing, golf, cricket, and other sports that really show how is his methodology transcending not only sports arena, but overall, what is humanly possible to reach tremendous results. I'm super thrilled to introduce you to today's guest on Legacy Leader Show, Nino Severino, who is joining us from UK, but also who is having a very powerful journey where he is today. He's also been part of the Elena Baltaja Academy and her legacy, which he will shed some amazing light, powerful story, as well as so many other things that he is currently involved. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Nino. Nino, welcome.
It's lovely to be here, Isabella.
Thank you so much for joining us and an opportunity to really depict on some few things, because obviously passion for sports is always been passion of mine, but so many of my viewers here that are watching and listening. And a lot of times we don't really see how actually the power of sports transcends and that attitude and aptitude in our personal lives. So without going immediately deep into your current environment and what you've been doing, do you mind sharing how did you even get into coaching and what was that journey like?
Yeah, I mean, the journey's been, I think about it more and more now, Isabella, and it has been really unique in many ways. But I started as a young coach. I retired from fighting and started coaching karate and kickboxing. Then I started to coach a very, very talented world-class fighter called Milo Hodge, who went on to win world medals, Commonwealth golds, double Commonwealth golds. And he really pushed me. You know, he always used to say to me, look, Nino, you got to stay up with me. You got to stay up. I want to be faster. I want to be this. I want to be that. I said, Milo, don't worry. I said, you're never going to sack me. I said, I always sack myself. So I always had to stay a step ahead of him because he was such an incredible athlete. That led me to inventing a movement system. That movement system led me to Spain. The presentation in Spain led me to Elena's Academy. And I delivered there, I impressed. That led to an invitation to London, the French Connection Tennis Academy, owned by Stephen Marks, the owner of French Connection. And that's where the story began. 5 years later, I started working with Elena, and before I knew it, I was at the greatest stadiums in the world supporting Elena Baltacha. So all a very, very strange sliding door situation, but that's what got me on the tennis tour, from teaching karate to being part of the Olympic team, the Great Britain Olympic team under Judy Murray's auspice.
Wow, what amazing journey, and how much you transcended from karate to obviously different sports, but specifically such a specialist again, sports of tennis. How was the transition in terms of skill set and mindset for you? And how is that different or not based on your perspective?
Well, I think if I would have probably known when I entered the world of tennis, because when I was supporting Elena, it was nutrition, mental skills, strength and conditioning. And she wasn't really going through a great time. She needed a change. She had to have a change. And I think the confidence she invested in me as a general program manager, then led to the opportunity of being a tennis coach and on the world tour with her. Now, I think if I'm honest, Isabella, if I'd have known then what the challenges were of transitioning into a tennis coach, I probably would have thought I couldn't have done it. But I didn't know, and I did take it on. And it because tennis is one of the most difficult sports in the world. But I was just smart. I continued to support Elena in all the complementary disciplinarian areas. But then I got very close with some of the best coaches in the world. And I learned very, very quickly. Day by day, I learned very quickly, you know, from spending time on court with Nigel Sears, Emma Raducanu's coach, Ivana Ivanovic, Kota, Daniela Huchikova, head of British tennis at that time. I learned an awful lot from Nigel Sears, who happens to be Andy Murray's father-in-law, Judy Murray, Louis Kaya, all these great people. So I learned very, very quickly. And that was really how I did it. I just tried to be very smart and very clever and align myself with great people who were super talented. And I survived somehow.
Obviously, just speaks about how quickly you are willing to change and how much you did not resist the change, how you embraced the shift, but also obviously assimilated and understanding for quick learning. But I love what you also mentioned, how important it is to be surrounded with the top people who will take you under their wing and kind of together show the ropes and get where you're at. But could you please tell us a little bit of story about Elena and what occurred there on personal or professional aspects of it, because I find it extremely fascinating and also beautiful and sad, but also with this amazing legacy. Since you're on the Legacy Leader Show, how does it transcend beyond the time for generations to come?
Yeah, I mean, Elena Bally, which was her nickname, she was known affectionately, Bally, was an incredible woman. And I will never meet a woman like her, I don't think ever again. And it was a professional relationship, but as one great man said to me, you know, tennis is an intimate business. You're with someone all the time. And if it clicks and there's something there, then it sort of does transition into more of a personal thing. And but me and Elena, you know, we were always very, very professional in the way that we managed ourselves. So some people didn't even know we were partners. We knew when to switch, how to be very professional on the tennis court, and then how to be partners off the court. And we fell in love. And it was a very difficult journey, because when I started working with Elena at the beginning, she really had a lot of problems. She was nearly 200 in the world. And she never really reached that height that she deserved to reach. But we trusted each other. We loved each other. She really trusted me professionally. And the journey began. And thankfully, she did get to the heights where she was a regular touring WTA player. We both had the honour of being picked for the Olympic team. And then we retired. It was a long, hard 8 years where we did achieve very, very well. And we were happy with what we achieved, with what we had. And then we retired in 2013, September, after the US Open. We got married in December, which was one of the greatest days of my life. And I know she felt very much the same. We were very in love. And we just wanted to live our life and do all the things that we talked about doing. And then 4 weeks later, on January the 17th, she had a pain. And we went to the hospital, and that was when the nightmare, and I mean a true nightmare, began. She was diagnosed with liver cancer, and 4 months later, she died in my arms at our home. And it is full of tragedy, but during the journey, Elena wanted to start a foundation. She was told, oh, you can never do this work in deprived and disadvantaged areas, helping more the people that haven't got the money, because tennis is known for you've got to have money to be in tennis. And she said, no, I'm not listening to that. We are going to help girls. We're going to help girls predominantly in deprived and disadvantaged areas. And when she was dying, she left me with a plan And I just commit myself with the support, with the massive support of our world governing body, the WTA, and our national governing body, the LTA, I commit myself now to saving her legacy and making sure that her legacy has great outcomes, which I think we're doing pretty well. Mm. So in a little nutshell, there it is, you know, a tragic story, a great story, a great journey, a tragic story, but with as long as you react and don't roll up and curl up and give up, a story that has so much meaning and great positivity now, Isabella.
That is so powerful. And again, thank you for sharing that, Nino, because for a lot of watching and listening, they may not know that story, but it's so powerful also to see how a lot of specifically specialized, as you mentioned, athletes, tennis is one of the most expensive specialized individualistic sports, and it's very hard. Point of entry, even with the great talent, it's challenging to so many. And I remember era when I was growing up in Europe, how much was invested predominantly in men and male in, as a sportsman versus female. And it's just so great to see not only how that is slowly changing and how you through Elena's vision and foundation are making tremendous impact. So do you mind sharing what is actually the currently happening with the institution and what is currently going on in world of tennis, specifically from UK standpoint and then worldwide?
Yeah, are you asking generally tennis or our foundation or both?
Both, please.
Yeah, well, the foundation, we continue to do what Elena started with me in the foundation, which is introducing tennis to young people. And with our connection with the WTA, predominantly girls. So it's introducing tennis. And as Judy Murray says in many of her presentations, you know, it's giving them the opportunity. They've got to have the opportunity. So you put a racket in a girl's hand and then they start to dream. And they start to dream because we have such great superstars in tennis now, you know, which is incredible. So they dream. And when they dream, they're motivated and inspired. And then the families, the parents, especially if they haven't got money, they need help. They need information. How can they do it? And Elena always used to say, Neen, you've got to find a way. I mean, I remember that so well. And it's in my head. You've got to find a way. And that's what we do. We find a way. We find a way of introducing tennis and we find a way of supporting parents to have the ideas and the knowledge to continue that journey, that pathway. And you don't have to have money. We've got girls now that came with pictures that we had with Elena when they were six, when they were seven, in these deprived areas where they probably wouldn't even seen a tennis racket. Now they're in America with great scholarships, you know, really fantastic, inspirational young women who always come back home to Ipswich. I mean, I just spent a glorious day in Birmingham with Sloane Stephens and Leila Fernandez and Shuai Zheng or Zheng Shuai. You know, it's incredible how they keep coming home. So that's what we're focused on. We're focused on taking girls along a journey and making sure that they can understand what tennis can give them. And what it can give you, if you're willing to travel to the States, is unbelievable scholarship, tennis and education, and an incredible life. And just to finish the cycle, they come in at 6-7, they go through the whole supportive program, they'll end up either in a private school here on scholarship or in America. And then Macy Hendon-Walker, who's our first girl, is now starting to work with the WTA. I mean, what an incredible story that is, hey?
I love it. And it's so great to see how things are shifting from 10, 20 years ago or beyond, because obviously now we have, as you said, finding the ways and more opportunities and more associations and different institutions are open to sponsor and support female athletes. So if you don't mind sharing a little bit from the lens of just in general, from competitive sport as a coach, from your coaching legacy that you already established in so many different sports, What would you say how that really plays so much to be successful in life, not only just in sports, but how that plays for success? Because so many, obviously, executive leaders and people around the world are learning from sports, but at the same time, they have their own established ways to success. It will be great to hear yours.
Yeah, I mean, Isabella, there's no difference between succeeding in sport and succeeding in business. And when I did retire, I went into business and became a relatively successful business person. You know, for me, it wasn't just about the money, it was about the life experience. So that's what took me back into sport. But what I have realized, having my feet in both worlds, commerciality, entrepreneurialism, and sport, are the virtues that you develop as an individual are exactly the same. And the virtues you need are relentlessness, strength, motivation, determination. All the virtues that help you succeed in sport, help you succeed in business. And actually, I think it's something ridiculous, like nearly 80% of CEO women come from sport. And there's a big reason for that. Because what they're learning in the environment and culture of sport, they're transitioning into business and they're using those virtues and skills in a really effective way. So there are not as many differences as you think, as many people would think, between sport and business. And I ended up in business development, business coaching, and one of the big global banks, funnily enough. And they were very interested to know how something like periodization, which is planning in sport, can really be effective in business. And these were the sort of things that I was trying to teach the business leaders. So there are many, many transitional components that I definitely connect with sport and business. And that led us on, actually, to develop a program called Sports Skills for Business. And we see thousands of young, growing children from about 12 years old to 18. Who we take through this program, and we really try and highlight, look, really focus on your virtues, your personality and your character in sport, because one day you're going to be able to really use those. They're going to be so valuable in either a career pathway or building your own business.
Virtues are so important, and I can express how much I actually kudo everything you've been sharing and doing so far, because right now we need a great exemplary legacy leaders. And you'll be surprised, for everybody watching and listening, how often I get asked, Isabella, who are great leaders that we should follow that really have already lived and led with their legacy, but also carving the path and showing who are the great role models. And I have to say, always starts with people of sphere of influence, with the coaches like yourself. So do you mind reflecting a little bit more about what virtues do you see that are most important right now based on landscape that we see not only in sports, but also in business that are either lacking or they're not as much visible as need to be?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really good question with probably quite a complex answer, but I'll try and keep it quite simple. First of all, there's no doubt about it, sport develops mental strength. And for the ones that can't develop at the highest level, then elite sport is not possible, unfortunately, because it's not technical and tactical that gets you to the realms of being a champion. It is the last step to greatness in any sport, to be the best of the best of the best, is the mental strength. And people are almost scared sometimes now to talk about mental strength. In fact, they want to focus more on mental health and mental illness sometimes. Instead of focusing on mental strength, it's almost like they don't want to talk about mental strength. But mental strength is very, very important. And that's developed in a culture and environment. And that culture and environment for me, which is one of the best, is sport. You know, that's what you build every second, every hour, every day, every week, every month, slowly without you realizing. It's molding your mind. It's molding the way you act. It's molding the way you react. So there's your base. It's molding someone that has that mental ability. And that mental ability, the derivatives of that mental ability are many things. And one of the things is that the aptitude and the focus on pivoting. And that happens in both worlds. And I think if you can pivot, you can deal with the challenges of business and sport. And I think sometimes that's lacking. People do not have the vision, that multifaceted, the angular vision of knowing how to react to a challenge. So then that's, again, in sport, we call it limiting factors, but limiting factors are limiting factors in business. If you can't pivot, if you can't find the way, if you can't find the solution, your journey stumbles, your journey staggers. So I would say the pivot, making sure you can pivot, is so important. And then the ability to be humble, not be egotistical, and learn from the great people you see around you. Be very good at identifying people who can hold your hand and help you develop. And then slowly start learning the specific, and the way I talk about business and sport is specific and non-specific skills. Make sure you're very, very clear on what they are. Make sure you're very clear on what you can control and what you can't control. Be very clear on everything integrates into everything. And sometimes it's not even that simple because they bleed. Remember that life is tough, and always go back home to that mental toughness that you develop. That's what's going to get you through. And volumes and intensities, understand how to go through the gears, how to make something short or big, and how to go to intensity or relaxation. All these things are very complex, and I can talk about them with such articulation and smoothness because I've lived it every day for decades. So there's my sort of long answer of the virtues that you need to develop in sport and how those virtues are so applicable and relevant to business.
I love how you were able to articulate that and also connect, because a lot of times we also see professional athletes, they're semi-retired, and they're pursuing different careers, but also we're seeing from colleges across the country here in the US, for example, how much athleticism play a huge role, but not everybody end up to be professional athlete, and how they now can apply some of the components in their life and the business. And one of the things, obviously, in the last few years, we definitely witnessed how little we have that emotional and mental toughness and capacity to handle the complexities of numerous magnitude that are all happening simultaneously. And as a result, we saw a lot of different types of action, or more than anything, reaction. And the reactive state of mind, we know what usually happens. So how would you suggest someone who is going through a lot or trying to self-regulate or establish that mental toughness, where to start? And is this something you also offer beyond your professional athletes?
Yeah, I think, again, another unbelievable question, and obviously really does represent how in tune you are with how the world between sport and business work. And we do have challenges. We have challenges in sport, and we have challenges in business. And you have to start at a point. You have to decide whether, when these challenges come, whether you want to fight or flight. Do you want to stick in the trenches and fight it out? Or are you just going to give up and curl up in a ball and roll away? And life is brutal, because everybody's life continues. So if you decide to do that, people tend to walk past. I mean, it's just, that's the way life is. The first point is to survive. So I talk about this. I talk about life is about survival. And that's not in a brutal way. I think if anyone's honest, they will all tell you life is about survival. It is about surviving every day. There's so many challenges. So with business, when these challenges come, again, as I've just mentioned, you have to pivot, and you have to be mentally strong. Now, you can't tell someone to be mentally strong. You can't say, come on, go and do some self-talk. Go and tell yourself you're mentally strong. Now, you can do that if you want, but it doesn't mean you're going to be mentally strong. That's just ridiculous. So you have to invest in yourself, and that isn't going to happen overnight. Now, investing in yourself is a derivative approach. What is it you can do, and what is it other people can do for you. So, and generally they're a little bit connected as well, because there's certain things you can do, study, development, commit yourself to the progression of any particular field in any business. And then there's identifying these very key people around you where you need to be very, you can't have an ego, and you must be humble, and you must listen and learn. And then during that listening and learning process, you get stronger yourself. And then, of course, when these big challenges come, you can get into the fight, but don't expect to just say, I'm strong, and you'll be able to take on all the challenges, because that will limit your pivoting ability. So it is very complex. And I think with a lot of, it's funny because I ask a lot of athletes, what makes you so great? And they don't know. They literally do not know what makes them great. They cannot articulate it. Because what happens is, it's a very slow process. Being you, if your talent is a very slow process, and some don't even know what's happened. They just happen to have survived the process and they are what they are. But my business as a coach to create champions was to study that. So in my methodology, I have the five top components that are linked to the subcomponents that are linked to the connected components. I studied greatness in a funny sort of way. And it's very complex. I have what I call a blueprint. And that blueprint for me explains all the different areas that you need to be very versed in, very skilled in, to make sure, one, you survive, two, you have the ability to deal with challenges, and three, you have that skill to pivot. Because the pivoting, you cannot underestimate the pivoting. Great athletes, great business people will always come to a juncture of challenge, and they will know which way to go. Do they go left? Do they go right? Do they go forward? They will always pivot in the right direction. So I think, you know, with business in particular, have that flexibility, be liquid, but learn along the way to align yourself with very, very good people, and also commit to self-development. You know, in a nutshell, it's a big subject, the questions you're asking, but hopefully I've explained some parts of it there.
You did great. And thank you again for tackling that, because as we see also what is shifting, specifically what that relationship between coach and coachee, all right, either it's in a business or sports, or where it's that gray line, what somebody need to take on their own responsibility, and where and how to lean on their coach, and the fine dance of, because everybody have to do their work. And I love what you also mentioned, how important it is for further development, for not only for people you coach, but also yourself personally, how much you already able to, again, demonstrate and transition in so many different environments, and yet still be extremely successful and be able to apply yourself in a ways that not only reflects that you understand now the different sports, different arena you're playing in, but also different rules as well. Again, back to people. People have all kinds of different personalities. And as a result, knowing them, I love what you said, more you know them, the better and more successful you are to really see what it takes to get them to the path to greatness. Speaking of that, what would you say contributed for you to be this remarkable coach, and things for everybody also to watch and listening that are coaching others, not necessarily maybe in the sports arena, that it could definitely take a little takeaway from your tremendous knowledge?
Yeah, I think from a coaching perspective, coaches are, without knowing it, psychologists, you know, in a lot of ways. We're counselors, we're psychologists, we're confidants. And yes, you have to know the line. I mean, with me and Elena, we elected to make our relationship into a loving relationship and a very respectful relationship that went on to be one of the greatest achievements and experiences I've ever had in my life. I learned so much from Elena. But you also, yes, you do need to draw the lines in the sand and know how those relationships develop, because a lot of them, or most of them, are professional relationships. And you really touched on it there, where the complexity of those relationships. But coaches are in many ways psychologists. Now, they won't know it, but again, for them, it's a second by second, hour by hour, day by day, week by week, month by month. And this is why great coaches are worth their weight in gold, because they know what to say, how to say it, where to say it, why to say it. And these unlock the keys to performance, because many athletes, of course, are very specifically talented in a sport, but that doesn't mean that they know how to walk through life and all the emotional and mental challenges that come along with that. And then you have to link that with limiting factors. So you can get an unbelievable athlete, but they're not quite thinking in the right way. So are they good enough? Are they world-class? Yes. Can they unlock that skill and deliver when they need to? No. So the limiting factor is something that is non-specific. So if we're talking about tennis, the key to performance is something that is totally unrelated to tennis. So you've got to have the skill. Now, that's what enabled me, because I really linked into that. And that's what enabled me to work in so many sports, because I understood the base skills of every athlete are the same. It's just some hold a racket, some catch a basketball, some run with a rugby ball, some have fighting mitts. It is all the same. Some will have a golf club. But what limits you in golf, the yips, can limit you in tennis through the serve and getting nervous and all the rest of it. So all these elements, if you connect with them, enable you to transition and transcend from one sport to another. So the coaches are very, very important people. And sometimes, the coaches, we stand in the shadows. No one sees us. And the great athletes, when they're being interviewed with success, always mention their coaches because they deserve to be mentioned. Some athletes never mention their coaches. And I find it incredible. But sometimes it's because the coach has done such a good job. He has convinced that athlete that they are the ones from a young child all the way through that were born with blood of the sporting gods in their veins. But what they don't realize, it was the coach side by side with parents, because parents are very important, that got them to where they were. But some do such a good job, the athlete is so confident, they thought it was only them. And it's never only the athlete. There's such a trilogy of components: athlete, coach, and parent. And that's another thing I talk about as well, the trilogy. So it's a very, very interesting sphere, but coaches sometimes are not as valued, I think, as they should be.
That is unfortunate, but it's so true based on statistics and world of coaching that I've been in experience. But yet it's so great to see, again, someone who is doing that, because that's your passion, that's your calling. And it's not just necessarily motivation to make money, and all the other stuff follows as a result of your attitude and aptitude. And with that in mind, obviously, Nino, you've been on such an amazing journey and a lot of ups and downs and changes and a lot of fortunate events, but also amazing torch. You're holding this amazing Olympic torch for Elena, for beautiful academy and things that you're currently doing. So what is left in your bucket list, and what is coming next?
Well, I'm very, very lucky. Along the journey, you know, I said you have to align yourself. You have to build great relationships. And the greatest relationship for me is probably with a big entity, you know, our world governing body. And some maybe would say, you know, big organizations like the WTA, the Women's Tennis Association, cannot have a heart. They're too big. How can they have a heart? But with me, they saved me. And in particular, a lady called Anne Austin in the WTA, who spent hours with me on Zoom from Miami. And we cried, we laughed. And their support has put me in this position. You know, they're one of the elements that helped me survive. I knew I needed help because the trauma of losing Elena was so great. It was so great, Isabella, but I was smart enough to know. One doctor said to me, "Are you depressed, Mr. Severino?" I said, "I'm not depressed. I'm not depressed." I said, "I'm brokenhearted." So I still had the ability to think. And one of those things was to ask for help. And the world governing body, Anne Austin, was there for me. And they still are every day. They're there to help me. And it's them that help me to currently do what I'm doing now. And to be a big part of the Come Play program, which goes around the world introducing tennis to many girls, sponsored by Morgan Stanley, the global bank. And it's people and entities like this that help me to carry on this really amazing journey, and still to be part of tennis. Although I don't travel around the world anymore, I'm still very much a part of tennis. And what Anne always says to me, you're part of the family, Nino. And they really do make me feel like that. So that's the tennis side. I'm still very lucky to be part of the Come Play program, part of our foundation, supported by Come Play and Morgan Stanley. And the other side, I'm now building an association called the International Coaching Association. So everything I've learned, I want to share, Isabella. You know, I want to share it because, you know, it's sometimes a bit sort of corny that people say it, but knowledge is power. But knowledge is power, but it's even more powerful if you share it. Now, so many people in the world are too scared. They're so precious about their knowledge. They keep it to themselves. And that's something I don't want to do, as Isabella. I want to find, we're organizing a massive Zoom on the 8th of July, where we've offered all coaches to come on this Zoom. And the reaction we've had, Isabella, is absolutely phenomenal. Some of the best coaches in the world are joining this Zoom. And this Zoom is where I want to begin sharing all the knowledge that I've built up. I'm 60 years old now, Isabella, 60. So I'm on the last part of the journey. So for me, you have to hand the baton across to the young coaches that are coming on. And I was very lucky to have coaches like Nigel Sears, like Louis Kier, some of the great coaches in the world, Judy Murray, who Leon Smith, our great Davis Cup captain coach who went on to win our World Cup of tennis. These people were all people who took time to help me. So that's what the future is now, sharing knowledge and watching the young coaches come through, female and male, and watching them do incredible things. That's really what I'm super focused on, Isabella.
Brilliant. I'm so thrilled and amazing. Again, as I mentioned, you already lived and led with your legacy and have plenty to leave behind as it is. And with everything you're sharing, it's going to be even more tremendous. But in closing, what would you like to be remembered and known for?
I think I'd like to be sort of remembered because I had quite a tough time entering tennis, and I didn't shy away from it. I took it on, and we need to look at the statistical books, but I think I am the only British number one and Olympic coach that never hit a forehand or backhand. Now, this is not just someone walking in and becoming a coach. I was actually recognized by our governing body and our world governing body and became part of the Great Britain Olympic team. And I would like to be remembered for, hey, you know what? Whoever tells you you can't do it, and this is what I got from Elena, find a way, pivot, is to be remembered for maybe being an example of don't ever limit your dreams. Don't ever say you can't. Within reason, almost anything is possible. I was a kickboxer who became part of the Great Britain Olympic tennis team. So maybe that's what I'd like to be remembered for. Take on your dreams and really run with them.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.